For 200 years, he's been invaded Aboriginal land.
The land belongs to us. We belong to the land.
They don't do these things. They talk about it, but they never do it.
Government is trying to take away from us.
Let's Talk. Triple A's flagship program that continues to elevate the diverse voices of First Nations people across the country. Centered around the unceded sovereignty of First Nations people in this country, honouring the history with a solutions-based focus on the future. With your host, Pomeroy journalist, Danny Tierce Johnson.
Yama, hello and welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to start the show by acknowledging country. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners from the lands that we broadcast from, and I'd like to pay my respect to their elders past and present, and I extend that acknowledgement right across this beautiful black nation of ours. Wherever you're listening today, your elders past and present. Today on Let's Talk, I've been looking forward to this one for a while. Today I'm talking to my brother, Troy Brady. Troy's a muso, he's an advocate, and just one of those really deadly, beautiful black men. And I want to get him in today because we're going to have a wide-ranging chat about black men, about men's health, about music, death in custody. We're just going to go everywhere. We're going to talk about the journey. And, yeah, it's just a real honour to get him in today. He's one of those brothers that I look up to and connect with, as we often talk about mental health and just yarning and just checking in on each other. And it's one of those beautiful exchanges between black men that I'd like to share today. So, Troy Brady, welcome to the show, my cuz.
Thank you. And Wandera, Yama, to all of our fellow listeners out there, my respects always to the Bama, where this traditional lands where we exchanging in this beautiful sacred conversation, to our elders past and present, and the brothers and sisters that are out there, even brothers and sisters that are there incarcerated. I say a big wonder to all of you fellas there and that you keep your heads up. And, far out, bro. We're brothers. We've known each other from back in the day through many different scopes. But it's always a pleasure to sit down. When I see you smile, bro, I'm just like, yeah.
Brother, so your mob and your country, my peoples?
I'm a Gubbi Yalanji Birri Gubba man. Ties to country, far north Queensland, north of Cairns on the paternal side, the Mareeba north to Cooktown regions, and Birri Gubba around Proserpine, west of Prossy, Collinsville areas, historical ties to Cherbourg, Warrabinda, Palm Island, through my mother's side, the Fisher side out there, Cherbourg, and raised in Inala, born in Rockhampton. I'm a Queenslander, Murray, Bummer, man, and happy to be having a yarn with you.
Yeah, my bro. You've been through a lot in your life. You've accomplished a lot. How you been?
Yeah, it's it's just like, the pitfalls and the ups and downs of life, man. But, for me, it's just being centred and knowing who I am throughout. I suppose cultural identity plays a key factor. I remember as a young boy, my father, Johnny Brady, dad, and his namesake, my brother, John, we're going up to Gympie, and dad said we're going to meet this old Gugu Yalanji man. I was 14, and at that stage he was, I think, 106 years of age.
Wow.
Yeah, he was born in the clothless times, in the wild times. Unbeknownst to me, I'm young, I'm Michael Jordan mad, Jerry Spring on TV, whatever, all that type of stuff back in, the early 90s. And I was like, Dad, I don't, you get in that car. And, went up, and it was a pivotal moment in my life. This old man, I was sitting there, and for me, growing up in Inala, and, I was strong culturally, but when people would ask, who are you? Mm. Oh, I'm Sherbert. No. Who are you? I've got mob up there, my country there, but I couldn't explain, definitively.
Yep.
I questioned, what is the dream time? How does all that play a part in, a fellow who was, sung the national anthem, we did it every Friday at, assembly and didn't know anything different type thing, But when I met this old fellow, he started talking this old language, it was like, it was Jatamali, it was like lightning, bro. And I was looking at this old fella in his eyes, and he was like 6 foot three. He was a big man.
Yeah.
You know, make Michael Jordan, for me, look like Buddy, you know? Look like a little fella. I'm like, Dad, is he really 106 or thereabouts? He said, yeah, undetermined, but he's well over a century. I'm like, my God. And, you know, this old, we're all sitting there and stuff, and it was documented, this exchange. And he's making this tea. And, you know, my father was sitting to my left, and my big brother was sitting, I'm in line, where I need to be, you know, protocol-wise. Making this tea, and he said, my boy, this tea for you. And Uncle Kwanji, one of my teachers, he said, boy, he made that tea for you. And I was like, oh. And I grabbed the tea, and I said to my dad, silly. I said, Dad, I drink Milo, not tea. He said, you better drink that tea right now. That old man just made that for you.
Yeah, you better drink it.
Yeah, but symbolically, you know, 30 years down the track, myself now as a proud father, but also a grandfather, you know? Grandfather to two beautiful grandkids and grandsons and two beautiful sons. That tea, that essence of life was what he was giving me, because I take my law, I take my cultural understandings extremely. That's me. Every time I wake up, I thank you, my ancestors. Where I've been to where I am now, I am just ordained, but I am just blessed and I'm just grateful. Grateful being the fundamental key word. When I look in the mirror, when I'm having this conversation with you today and having the ability to share, you know, what or how you respond to the adversities and the darkness when it comes and it grabs you, you know?
Yeah.
How do we respond as black men? How do we respond as people in general? Do we turn to the bottle? Do I put that tea is now my spear, is now my shield, my protection, my caveat? Do I put that down and do I, like, pick up bottle?
Yeah.
And those are the decisions, whether they be insalubrious or whether they be detrimental to us as people and stuff. And it's taken me a while to get to this understanding. We call that Google Binal, a deep understanding of identity, of, you know, you know, where we are as men.
Mm. And, yeah, and healing's... For me, healing is the hardest thing you can ever do. And so can you share your story around sobriety and coming sober and how you do that? Because it's something I find a lot of black men and women out there, it's something that we constantly chase, sobriety.
Yeah.
We don't want any vices in our life. We're getting too old now. I'm in my late 40s. Yep. You know, I'm notching up to the 50. And we're constantly in this search for healing and happiness, but it's the hardest search of all.
It is, man.
And, you know, you've been able to, I guess, you know, come through adversity and pain and make these decisions, and you're stuck to it.
Yep.
Can you share with me, I guess, how you made those decisions, but also how you keep on that path? Because I just find it so hard to stay on the path.
Absolutely, but metaphorically, I used the fire, that Wunderman analogy. You know, for me, I sit around a family fire, symbolically, every day of my life. It's a family fire now. I know what an out-of-control fire is. I know what a bonfire is. You get close, you're going to get burned. And, you know, with that, you know, with living, and, you know, it's hard living. We got to, you got to learn and you got to grow as a person when when you're being hit down through things that, you know that are going to get you in a bit of mischief and stuff. But for me, it's that family fire where I can now. I mean, I love my coffee, but it's the same as that tea. But it's the same as that tea that old man made me when I was 14. I now drink that tea.
Yep.
And I take that tea seriously. And I use that tea and the beautiful elements, those concoctions of many different learnings, you know, over a period of time where I can, you know, be strong for my kids. You know, people out there will know that I've recently, and I'm, how do I say this, I find strength in sharing. And I hope that, you know, with the testimony And with the stories that I do share, whether it be through my music, my theatre, my visual art, or just general conversations, whether it be, you know, live, you know, national talkback, or whether it be me and you sitting around the fire, you know, and just sharing.
We're talking about sobriety. And
sobriety.
Asking me how you came to that decision. I remember you telling me before on the show that you jumped on a plane. You can't remember it.
We've all been there. So, you know, I was on a tour in 2017 with a black armband, and we went to North America, you know, Asia, and it was beautiful and stuff. And, you know, just getting amongst, you know, the lifestyle, you know, as you will. But, yeah, just coming back, I just remember. And these certain components of our lives where you remember your lowest points. And I don't remember jumping on the plane from LAX coming back to Australia because I was intoxicated. And when I reflect, I'm like, oh, man almighty. That's why with, you know, you see on all my social media posts and stuff, it's not Troy Brady. It's Junga G.
Yeah.
That's I'm Junga G. Troy Brady's that fella back then. All due respect to my mum and dad, I'm proud I'm their son. But I'm Junga G Brady. I'm not Troy Brady. That's a different fella.
You sort of shed that skin.
That's a different fella to what I was now.
Yeah.
To the man that I am now, that fella, he used to bonfires. I'm used to family fire now, you know. And that's the way that I live my life. And, you know, there could have been times where I could have been locked up. Easily, I'm like,
oh yeah.
How the hell did I end up?
Because when you're blind like that and intoxicated like that, you put yourself in really dangerous situations that you don't realise at the time.
Absolutely.
And you could have got arrested on that flight. You could have had a fight on that flight.
Exactly.
Lot of things could have happened, brother.
Yeah, man. And I'm just, as I said, bro, it's just based on, you know, how do you respond to when you're at your lowest. I mean, I was going to touch on that before, and it's a sensitive issue for myself, but also for people out there with mental illness. I lost a son 6.5 months ago.
Yeah.
You know, and I praise his legacy, and I praise his journey, and I praise his life. You know, through that, you know, that loss, and even my now still grief, you know, what purpose do we as people find ourselves in situations like that? I remember the morning of with, you know, the family, it just spread like wildfire, you know.
Yeah.
It just spread like wildfire, and I was just overwhelmed.
That fire became out of control.
Oh, dude, it was
that you're wildfire. Talking about, right?
And you know, within that wildfire, we're talking about fires. I had a fire, a burnt fire down the back, and I got some iron bark. Iron bark kills off darkness, dumbwood, this one here. And, you know, all the mob, and they asked, you know, if you don't mind, can we sit down the back here? And it was just mayhem. And they offered me a drink, a bourbon and coke.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's my drink. That was my drink. They offered me a drink. And I'm thinking to myself, man, if I can't, I just lost my boy. And this is the saddest, darkest day of my life. If I can't beat the system, should I join the system? But I knew within that moment, coming off the back of multiple heart surgeries, I have lupus, so that in itself, I've had 2 strokes, 2 heart attacks, you know, it's a battle, but it's a battle up here. That's the strongest tool in the shed, and that's your mind, that's your temperament. And I looked at these folks, I was like, oh, man, I can smell it, and I know that smell familiar, it's familiar. But the consequences off the back of that, probably about a couple of seconds after processing, I heard the door, front door, and it was my grandkids. And they were crying. They called me Gummy, grandfather, in Yalanji. Gummy, Gummy. And I was like, no, you're right. I'm okay. And that was the last test for me, from the darkness, you know.
That's,
and I'm just blessed, personified.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's almost like the old people push the grannies through the door.
Bro, I was right there.
You know what I mean?
I was like right.
How close was you?
I was right there. I could smell it. I was right there making that decision. And brothers out there can attest, you know, in terms of sobriety and stuff, where we look to, you know, be the best versions of ourselves. But there are sacrifices that need to be made. And for me, dealing with those two strokes, dealing with those heart attacks, dealing with so many things, but also, you know, I'm just glad that the last 5 years of, you know, from when my son, when I gave up the alcohol, 2017, that they seen the best of me.
Mm.
Even with my struggles in hospital, bro. And I come out, I went in hospital as an 84 kilo man. No, yeah, when I come out of hospital, I was 57 kilos. And my son, bless his heart, he's seen me fight. He's seen me fight for life. You know, and I'm glad that he's seen that facet.
Yeah.
But just that power that we as people possess, but we just got to find it.
Mm.
And I'm glad that he's seen that. I didn't know that, you know, like him, many of us out there are battling voices, that inner darkness. They, you know, they play tricks and they antagonize and, you know, it's there.
Mm. Never goes away.
But the more that we open up the portal, whether that be through our vice, whether that be through alcoholism, whether that be through drugs, whether that be through gambling, through many things, you know, that affect and impact our people,
mm.
you know? Yeah, man. And that's the, what's the word? That's the true test, you know? And I say it from a place of where my views are panoramic. I can see.
Yep.
I can see everything. And I'm switched on spiritually. I read the signs, you know, your spirit. I'm just like, oh, I feed off your energy, bro, you know? So to have this conversation is just like us sitting out in the scrub.
Yeah.
And just sitting around on your country or my country up there, and it's a beautiful healing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, just two brothers yarning, you know? It's not even, I don't even think of it as a radio show sort of thing, you know? It's just two brothers sharing a yarn, and hopefully you can send some healing out there across our communities to men, women, children everywhere.
Yeah, brother.
Talking of healing, I want to talk to you about music. You're one of my favourite artists, you and your boy. But take us way back, the journey of music for you. Back when you were 16, I believe, I dug up an old Deadly Vibe, old profile from back in 2007 of you. And go and check out the picture of him. Looks exactly like Dean. But you know, you started at 16, I think, you're self-taught.
Yeah.
The Shadows, one of your father's books.
Yeah, okay. We're going there.
I'm going there. I'm remembering all this too, bro. I'm not even reading it off the script. But also back then, you know, sports is a big part of your life.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise this, but you were the state halfback and captain or something, under 17s?
Yeah, 7 and 7 was in the
Queensland.
Cal was, you know, Tony Cal, we're all the same age.
Yeah. And in 1994, I just want to share this to the audience, you were the Australian darts champion.
Yes.
I didn't know this about you.
You know what? Speaking about Spears, carrying those Spears, I beat the world number one at that stage, Eric Bistro.
So I wonder if many people know this about you, that you were the Australian darts champion.
Yeah, but I was gone, bro. I could throw a spear, and I was, you know, I backed myself too, you know. I backed myself like Jonathan Thurston.
180.
Hey, brother, in a game, I hit 170 in a game. Peg out. Triple 20 bull. And I was like, wow, did I just do that, you know? But, yeah, those small achievements, man, you know, they define us as we go older. You know, give me on a double now. Yeah. But those are proud moments, even the business side, bro, you know. I captained there for a couple of the games and stuff at tournaments and stuff, but you know, that weekend, it just proud moments. But you know, it all led towards music.
Mm.
I just, you know, I always could sing, but I was one of them fellows that were real mild, even for mum and dad and them at home there. So you know, that we're talking about that footy carnival when I was 15 or something. We lost my sister. Mm. We lost her up at, we call it Blackjack, at the Laura Dance Festival, 91.
Yeah.
And off the back of that, throughout that period, my father bought me a guitar. So I've come home from school getting ready for trials. Not trials, for rep training. And I walked, he said, go into the room, we've got to go. I walk in the room and Dad's got this black electric guitar, an amplifier, a microphone. And there's 10 of us in the family. I'm like, hey, who's this for, you know? This before anything, bro. So I'll come out, mum and dad sitting in the lounge room. And Dad's home from the... He worked Business City Council in the sewage department, you know. I'm like, Dad, what's going on here? Oh, you know, you never know. You know, just practice. Just practice, you know. And from that, you know, after, you know, bless, we lost my sister, beautiful. She was 19. I did a gig, we were raising money for her, up at Anala Wanderer at the preschool down on Azalea Street. Mm. And I got mopping the dropouts. We're playing. And when I'm going up there, you know, helping with the cooking and stuff, my system was set up next to Uncle Bimbo Duncan. We just lost him. Bless his heart, too. We lost him, you know, two and a half weeks ago. Mm. Uncle Bimbo Duncan's, beside his rig, there was my little rig. I'm like, what is that doing up there? And I'm looking at Dad, real gulligy. Well, I'm like, oh, man, almighty. But long story short, man, I got up there. But I didn't face the crowd.
Oh, you done the whole Rodriguez thing.
The crowd is there.
Turning your back?
No, the crowd's there. Kerry Jackson there, Uncle Bimbo there. I don't know, I think Uncle Mop to the right of me, but I did not look that way. So before all that Aim for More and all that type of stuff, I gigged with Uncle Mop and the Dropouts first. And Uncle Bimbo, because he was I'm on a grand final with him as a 12-year-old. So I knew him intimately. That was unk, you know, and that's something that we like that with to this day until we lost him recently. But, I just looked at him. He's saying, G, D, E, you know. And then I think it was Brisbane Place when that song came out, just that old leg started tapping. I started looking back like that. And I just gradually looked around. Ooh. And
starting
I was like,
feel it.
Okay, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling the feeling of the feeling here, you know. But that was before the Aim for More stuff.
Yeah, man. And so that first gig of Mopping the Dropouts, bless yous, such an inspiration to many and have been mentoring so many of our artists. Shout out to Castle Ray Connection if you're listening.
Yes.
Mopping that drove down to Canamble and seeing them. And, surprised them. So, little tangent story there.
So deadly.
But how'd you got a little bit of confidence out of that.
Yeah, man.
And then
into the Aim for More story. So it was serendipitous. We just, four brothers playing basketball. We come home one afternoon. We're downstairs talking about girls, talking about, you know, just looking at the mask. You know, boy stuff. You know, 16, 17, testosterone is, you know, running wild. And in the still of the night comes on the radio. And just automatically we just find our parts. Just naturally, just bang. Right into Torfell at the high. He had a high voice. And, hey, did you hear that? You know, and then, you know, the following week we were singing at Anala. At the NATO week down in Ireland, then from there, Uncle Tiger Bale said, no, I heard you follow, you know, his voice. Heard you follow singing good out there. We'll get you in the studio at Rock Lee there. Yeah, we thought we were superstars, bro. We go to Rock Lee and we upstairs there and we singing, you know, we just laying these acapella tracks down. Nervous as all hell, but, you know, we're just following, you know. And then, I think it was NATO that year, we were in town here on the truck there. Poor AAA truck, bro. God, give it all the community.
It's Aim for More.
That's where it started, bro. No, it was just us and our voices, you know. And I was just talking to my manager in the car. I said, bro, we're one of the first, even with Harry Wildbait, you know, my brother out there, King of Roy, Wandai. I said, he's one of the first rappers back in 93, before Hilltop Wood, before any of them.
Yeah.
He was one of the first black rappers that were out there, bro, you know. Yeah, we were a vocal group, but we were rapping and stuff too, you know. I said, yes, and that's some of the stuff that I want to document. I'm doing, I was talking to him about a theatre, this theatre stuff that I'm doing down in Sydney. I just want to document the story.
Yeah.
But also, I was telling him that we were down with songwriters. It was myself, A.B. Wright and Casey Donovan. We were selected as musicians working in the theatre space. And it was beautiful. I went down to tell the Aim for More stories. Yeah. But when I started digressing and talking about that story that I tell you about that old fella, I started crying emotionally, and Auntie Ray was like, you need to go here.
Yeah.
You need to go right here. Look at us. We all crying, you know? And that's kind of the story. But to where I am now, you know, to hopefully inspire and empower people through that medium of, you know, theatre, you got more space and time and you can go wherever you want with it. And it's so beautiful. You know, I did that Barbara and the Can Dolls with the sister Ursula.
Shout out Ursula. She's a beautiful woman.
Yeah, my sister girl and Elaine Crombie.
Yeah.
They're my sisters, bro, you know. I did that 2 years with them sisters and I was like, oh, you guys are mad.
Yeah, yeah. And this, the talent. I often talk to Ursula around sort of, she should be famous. She should be well known.
Absolutely.
She should be on every TV show, on every night. You know, she's that talented. Because of this Australian industry that we live in, you know, sisters like that don't get a go sometimes.
Absolutely, absolutely. And she is one of them strong matriarchs who's, you know, she's just humble, beautiful, spiritual sister. And she knows, you know, I got her back. She has my back. She assisted with this. We did stuff online throughout COVID and stuff, and it was a beautiful ceremony, bro. So to invest more oxygen into that, I'm so looking forward to it. Like, I've been just so, you know, encapsulated with my music and with my visual art, but also just general life, you know.
Yep.
You know, my grieving and stuff. So it's a balance.
But that creativity's healing, eh?
Oh, bro, you know, to get back to that, yeah, it is healing.
Because I've seen you've been painting again.
Oh, bro, it's so beautiful.
You know, I've started painting a little bit again.
Yes,
you know, just getting back into my art again and back into healing and whatnot. What is it about the creative space for you? What does it do for you?
It's just the ebbs and the flows of life and the currents. I don't like I don't like stagnant water.
Mm.
Stagnant water compels, you know, disease and that, you know, I used to be in a band, Bunawarren. Bunawarren means the water flowing.
Yeah.
And that's the way, you know, for me, you know, in addition to that fire, that Bunawarren, which is another powerful natural element of life. You know, we need it. We need fire. We need Bunna. We need water. For us to suffice. So, you know, it's got to be running, and that's how it is for me with all these artistical hats that I do wear. And, you know, those song lines and those spears are passed on to Boy, to my lad.
Mm. You
know? He's down in Melbourne at the moment. He's doing such beautiful things, but I'm just, you know, all that sorry business that we add up, you know, with my other son, Duke, and stuff, and, you know, it still breaks my heart stuff. But I've got, you know, I've got, how do we stand on higher ground?
Mm.
How do we stand in our light? Or do we remain, you know, in that place where, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because that profound loss that you've had could have ripped your family apart. But it seems to have. And it seems to have, you know, I think it's brought a lot of people closer together. It certainly brought me and my sons closer together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
How do you stand in your light? How do we as black men stand in our light when there's so much trauma and pain around, but, you know,
we
can't use an excuse a lot, but it's real. But how do we stand in our light and be our best?
The number one fundamental key factor is family. Without family, we've got no culture. Without no culture, we've got no spirituality. And it's a cycle. And that's how I look at it. Without my family, I wouldn't be the man that I am with the tools that I have in my shed. I am just grateful that, you know, my mum and dad made the sacrifices, considering where they had been. You know, my grandmother, my maternal side, she was blackbirded from Sherbert to Warrabinda. Not by choice, circumstantially, because she was a bit loud. And my grandfather, old Paddy Brady, went to two world wars, the first world wars, as a 14-year-old, you know, and he come back and he was a non-citizen, and he died a non-citizen at 70 years of age.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So those types of legacies, when you put it into perspective, and then so that and old grandfather Don Brady too, my grandfather's younger brother, the same with what he did here on the streets here, you know, but also bringing that traditional dance to all the mobs down here.
Yeah.
You know, they all, and everywhere I go, brother, they all say, hey, your grandfather, old Don Brady, oh, you know? And that's something that I do take seriously. I lost my way.
Yeah.
There was a period where I lost my way, but I'm okay now. I can see, and I do acknowledge them old people.
But that's so good to hear, because our people out there need to hear this, that it's okay to lose your way.
Yeah.
It's going to happen at some point.
Yep.
But it's about how we respond to that. And how we get back on track. And from what I'm hearing from you, really investing in our family. And for me, I tell you what, traditional dance is one of the most healing things I've ever done. It's also mad fitness too.
It is, bro. When you're shaking that old
I popped my shoulder doing the gogi dance there a couple of weeks ago. But no, honestly, like traditional dance, I just find that because you dance together as a small community, and that connection creates a feeling of healing, I call it. And
yeah.
you know, when we do step off the path, to be able to come back into cultural groups with family and yarn and talk and dance, it's just, just a sense of healing that it gives and positivity, like makes you happy, right?
Absolutely, but and to also get it, you know, I mean, there are men's and women's groups that are out there and where you can, you know, just sit down and just share, whether it be minute or whether it be something that is, you know, profoundly personal.
Whatever. Yeah.
Just as long as we are getting it off our chest, you know. As you said, you know, within an instant, the winds of change can change like that. And when you hit hard, how do you respond? And that's always the question that you got to ask yourself, you know. And, I am strengthened, I am resolved, I am stoic, I am unambiguous. And I'm grateful. You know, I'm not compromised no more. You know, I know where I stand as a urbanised, black, bummer, Murray man. I'm setting a platform for you know.
Yeah.
I've got another son, but I've also got a nephew out there, Trinae, and all my other nieces and nephews. And my prized possessions are my grandsons. They're my prized possessions.
Every time you say your grandson, your whole face just lights up. It does. Your face, your smile just goes like that. You know, that must... how was I going to say it? Must give you so much purpose in life, your grandsons.
Oh, man.
Considering what you've been through as a family, to now have these babies, and you've entered basically another stage of fatherhood, haven't you?
Pretty much, bro.
You know?
It wasn't, yeah.
Can we talk about that? And
yeah.
How it all feels, my bro?
Them little fellas, it wasn't anticipated, being that, my late son was so young. But, you know, it's a situation where, you know, for me, it's perspective. It's perspective, and it's just like, okay, you know, I'm proud of my son for fighting a good fight for as long as he did. I'm immensely proud, you know. If I'd known a bit more, then I would have acted accordingly.
Of course we would have.
And that's, you know, that thing, are you okay? Or, you know, we respond, you know, we trade, you right? Those types of things. I find myself using that all the time. I did before, and I was hands-on, but you just don't know family and friends out there listening to this broadcast. Check on our family, because you don't, you know, until it happens to you, it's just like, oh, we well, you know. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, but it's so normalised out in our community.
Yeah.
You know? And it's them little things about sitting around the fire, but back to them little grannies, you know, as a grandfather... Yeah, it's just it's sitting around the fire, and there's been plenty of time where all that stuff, sitting around the fire and just having on my thing or just listening to them, you know, yelling and fighting and you know, there's a video of me and my grandson, he punched me in the face, I'm like go on,
us.
But you know, 20, 30 years from now, when you know, I'll put a cross over what have you, you know, they're the ones that are carrying the spears in our legacies, bro, you know. So I just want to make sure, just like I gave the 5 years to my son of sobriety, of soberness as a, you know, a cultural, strong man.
Yeah.
You know, Deanie boy gets the same too. He relishes it now. We me and him talk about everything, but and it's a beautiful relationship. I'm not afraid to say, I love you, you know? And that's my son.
We love you, Deanie boy, if you listen, Kels.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? And we as black men, we need to say those things more.
Yeah.
Mum, thanks for that, man. I love you, you know? Our sisters. You know, our aunties, our grandmothers, you know? And, yeah, it's just those little things where, you know, and back to those grandkids, bro, and that's where it all comes down to, full circle for me. It's like I'm looking at my sons all over again.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, ooh, wow. Yeah, something special. And I'm blessed and I'm grateful and I praise the ancestors every morning, every night. Yep, give me the gym, you know, give me walking around, give me, you know, creative, having this conversation with you strongly, you know.
Yeah. Standing in your light.
Standing in my light, bro.
Yep. Can we talk about Deanie Boy and his music and just the musical collaboration between the both of you is just so beautiful. And, you know, I get over and brings out the onions and starts chopping it up. For me, when you used to play, I do get emotional all the time because, I don't know, it just reminds me of me and my boys and I just love them so much too.
Yeah, bro.
And to see you and Deanie Boy standing in the light with the guitars and singing. Can you tell us about that journey for you two?
Yeah.
Your songwriting and the even, connection?
Even when he's, me and his mother were cruising in cars when he was like 2, 3, and he'd be pitch perfect. I'd look at Trev and I'd be like, can you hear this? We'd be going to a rehearsal or going to a gig or so. I said, can you hear this? This is insane, you know? And since you're a young boy and, you know, even on Australia's Got Talent, he wanted to do all this. I said, no, you're not, you're only 5. You're not doing Australia's Got Talent.
And he's like, yes, I am.
I'm going to do this, Dad, you know? And he's always been like that. And then, you know, he did that Cairns Got Talent. I said, well, you're going to go on that one, you know? And as fathers and parents and stuff, you know, we're going to push our kids in the direction that, of things that they love. If he was a mad little footy player, I'll go on and I'll take, you know.
Yeah.
And they played footy, they played soccer, they played everything, them too, you know. But he loved music and, you know, he won that little thing up there, Cairns Got Talent, and out of that they put him on the frame for Australia's Got Talent, which he got to the grand final and stuff as an 8-year-old. Small little fella, but,
you know. I remember it. I remember it vividly.
10 years later, bro, he's cultivated up. You know, he's got a nice little pillar of people around him, including myself, people that do care about him, you know. he's signed to a major, I can't say at this time. But he's just, you know, down in Melbourne at the moment, just songwriting and collaborating.
He's got some surprises coming, doesn't he?
We can't say, but... Yeah, no, but
we're
extremely excited because, as you say, we've been through some tough stuff, but to have this, you know, this so much beautiful things that are, you know, in the pipe works, and I've heard the songs, they're just, well, I just said to him, dude, you know, as a person that's been in the industry, and I was talking about it to him last night, I've been grafting for a long, long time. And I'm still grafting.
Mm.
You know, after this interview, I'm going next door to Paul and we're going to be laying down some demos and stuff.
Yes.
But you know what I mean? Like, but, you know, I said, Dean, just be grateful. You know, I have never had no Sony or anything like, But anyway, I haven't had no major, you know, record label, you know, knocking down on my door or stuff like that. But you know what I mean?
Mm.
Be grateful.
Yeah.
But be humble in your successes, my boy.
That's one of the things I love about Danny Boy. He always comes up, hey, Uncle Danny, how are you? Yep. Easy performing. Can I get you a drink? You need, like,
yep.
It must make you very proud to know that he's so respectful and
yep.
humble, and that's been passed on, and that represents your family.
Yeah, and that's it, just to be sincere, humble, and just down to earth, particularly with your successes.
Mm.
And I'll be the first one to check him. Hey, that's not your walk. Hey, that's not your talk. Talk normal. Knock it off, you know? And yeah, man, just enjoy the ride because it's going to be hectic.
Yeah.
But he's prepared. I know that fire, we go back to that fire, he's ready for it,
yep.
You know?
Yes.
Because he knows that family fire.
Mm.
He knows the family fire.
And it's so good to have, I guess, your support and reassurance around him and that realistic advice of,
You know,
he's going to go to parties, he's going to be at events, he's going to, you know, he's going to have all sorts of things chucked at him and how you stay standing in your light.
Yep.
Because it's easy to walk in the shadows when you become a bit of a celebrity sort of thing, you know.
Yep.
So it must be so grounding for him to have you around and draw on your own experiences.
Absolutely.
And
just
keep
say,
him on track, you
I
know.
I say to him, remember those little moments of your brother, yourself, with, Uncle Kwanji and all our family up there on country. Sitting there by Dara with the stars, they kiss the sand and it glitters and, you know, you fellas just, you know, catching turtle and just remember those moments. Wherever you go around this world, remember, you know, country and remember I always get back to that cultural fire and I just, you know, reference that Bunawarran, that water, you know. Those two important things is serious for me.
Yeah, you can't let the water... I mean, I think it was Wesley Collin was sitting here talking about positive mental health and was saying how, like, the water in your brain, so you got to keep it flowing. If it goes stagnant, you get that algae.
Absolutely.
And that covers your brain,
yep.
You know, and that creates, you know, that bad mental health stuff. So we're talking about that and the importance of keeping the water flowing as black men and black women.
And understanding that we are not bulletproof. We're not bulletproof.
No.
I thought I was. Reality check, Junga G. You know, reality check.
Talk about that. Talk about this bulletproof. Because I thought I was bulletproof too until I was about 35, I think it was, and I collapsed in a mental health heap. and went through a lot of depression and anxiety because the stuff that I'd buried my whole life come to the surface eventually.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And that was a rock bottom time in my life where I had to sort of really change the way I was living my life and what I was doing in my life because I probably wouldn't be sitting here today if I didn't change, you know?
And that's both you and I.
Yeah.
What makes us men? What makes us tick as men? How do we define a man? Are you a man by, you know, the amount of beers you drink?
Ooh.
How much you smoke? Or, you know, walking up big in that prison yard?
Yeah, the rites of passage.
The rites of passage? Is that our initiation? And I could have found myself in many of those predicaments.
Ooh.
Quite easily. You know, what is initiation? For me, how I define... It's understanding. Because many of my mob don't have that capacity or the ability to re-engage with culture. Because, you know, that white Australian policy and, you know, our mob being taken away and, you know, it's real.
Yeah.
And that has deleterious consequences on us as peoples today. Miglus don't, you know, they, you know, I mean, it's serious. We're not, you know, when we're out there and we're marching and stuff like that, we, you know, we're marching for, you know, our basic human rights. You know, 500 or so of our brothers and sisters have perished, including Marnie Sherry, you know?
Yep.
2 years ago, and that's still real and raw. I still remember my mother in the lawyer's office watching on CCTV footage when her sister, her baby sister, passed away on a cold concrete floor into the Dreamtime. You know, and mum and they, I'm like, oh, man, this is freaking terrible.
Mm.
But when, you know, when people out there respond like, oh, but what was she doing there in the first place? Well, don't be so ignorant. Look at the evolving and the ownership of the crown and her majesty and, you know, how that all plays a part to where we are now.
Yeah.
You know, where's the pride in the genocide? We're not saying that for no reason because it was genocide. You know, it was divide, conquer, come and just, you know.
Yeah, it's not a rule. It's not a protest catch cry, is it? It's real.
It's real.
You know?
And we're dealing with it. My son, my Auntie Sherry, what was she doing locked up? Well, hang a sec.
Why was she locked up in the first place?
You know what I mean?
You know what I mean?
You know?
Why'd the coppers put her in there?
And that comes back to that mission mentality, the mission days.
Mm.
Before that, where now, there was resistance. It wasn't a handover. We didn't just say, yeah, your Union Jack, place it on here by the fire. No. Our people resisted. They are warriors, you know? And it's beautiful to have that DNA within this vessel to be talking about this so many years later because we're still dealing with those human rights abuses and issues. And, you know, man, I can go on and on. We haven't got enough time, but, you know, and that's something where I could lean into the Dajwa. You know, being so passionate about, you know, all the stuff off the back of Auntie Sherry has compelled me to, you know, working with other deadly sisters and, you know, community groups that have been affected by black deaths in custody. You know, just under 500 deaths. That's 500 black beautiful people, coffins.
Just since 1991.
That have been lowered since 91. But, you know, we're not talking about the hundreds of thousands of beautiful black lives that were taken since, the colony was set up.
Yeah.
You know, since, you know, the Miglu fellas come over. And these are discussions. We're not against you white fellas. Come work with us and understand. It's about conversation. You know, invest in conversation.
It's about the truth.
And truth sharing and telling is what we as black people, your First Nations people, your oldest people on this planet, want to have these conversations. And that's why through my music, my art, and you know, just with everything, that's what I'm compelled. And I'll do that till the day that I die. I tell you, even from my hospital bed, brother.
I know you will. Okay, we are running out of time a little bit, but I just want to ask you lastly, and I guess, you know, there's brothers and sisters sitting out there that's listening, who might be trying to get back on the path, who might be trying to stand in their light. For someone who's been knocked down so many times, you know, life smacked you around a bit.
Yeah.
But you keep getting up, brother.
I don't know what compels me. Go on.
If you could just share that story about how you keep getting up and how you keep going, because I just think it might be inspirational for mob out there. who are trying to get back to that path, that light, to stand in their light?
For me, when I was in hospital, and it was the fifth time that I went down into theatre, complications, I just wanted family in the physicality, in this here now, but also spiritually had my family.
Mm.
And when I woke up, I think it was the third, fourth time I woke up, and they were all around me. And you know what that said to me? That wherever we go, they all there behind us. They all there behind us, whether the trials and tribulations, ups and downs. Have faith that our old people are right there. It was profound, and that's one thing that I took out of that visit. I thought, oh, this is going to be a piece of cake. Operation, I'll be out in 2 weeks. No, 3.5 months later.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. And I said to the doctors, I'm going to be walking out of here. I was dusty, but I did, 57 kilos. Family, not many of our people can reconnect with culture because of what's happened historically, but just having an understanding that, you know, if we are parents, if we are grandfathers, uncles and aunties, them little eyes are watching us, them little people. And they're going to mirror image everything that we do to a T. The way we talk, the way that we act socially, brothers and sisters, be proactive, get physical, go out there, do boxing classes, sit around your family fire. Be careful. If you're going to drink, that's okay, but do it within reason, you know? I just made the call that, no, that's no good for me, and I just quit. And that was with smoking, that was with gambling, that was with the whole lot, you know, the whole lot. Just do everything within reason, you know, make sure that, you know, their fridges are full. The kids are fed, you know. This is all within my own family. I tell my family the same thing. Hey, knock it off now. Knock it off, you know. You know, and they are the realities of our lives within black homes. You know, we see a lot. We see a lot, and, you know, it's for us to act and call out. Hey, knock it off now.
Yeah.
This one need to get to school, or this one need to, you know, get the doctor, or, you know, just little things like that. And that's when I just say a family is so important. Family is culture. Culture is family, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, brother, thanks for coming in today. Can you keep coming back? And we just keep yarning every couple of weeks? I just think, you know, there's so many people out there just, can learn so much from you. And you're just one of those beautiful black men that I just think people need to hear, and just we can just yarn, and then people can take some pearls of wisdom away from these chats.
I respectfully say that back to you too, brother.
No, thank you, my bro.
True God.
But, we've sent a bit of healing out there today, and I hope that Troy sharing a bit of his journey has made you feel a bit better out there and given you guys a bit of strength as well. You know, if you are struggling, like Troy said, try and connect with your family if you can. A lot of people in the cities live in isolation, so try and look for men's group, women's groups. Yeah. You can find out.
I was just about to reiterate, there is professional help out there. And our brothers and sisters, you are not weak. That old adage where I just eat some concrete and hot. No. Get the help. We need you. Our community needs you. Society needs you. Whether you're on war or bender, whether you're down, Maury, we need you. Okay? And we love you. Your way.
Your way. We do love you, black people out there listening. Get that help. Get professional help. Don't muck around. Because, like Troy said, we need all our families. We need all our connections out there. And, we need to keep telling this Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander story that's so ancient and old. So thanks for listening. Thanks for coming in, my peoples.
absolute pleasure, my brother.
Troy will be coming back. He's now a regular on Let's Talk. Sign him up. thanks for listening today. Hope you have a beautiful black day out there, my people. You've been listening to Triple A Murray Country.
Yeah, hello.